As I got another rhyme, another rhythm for y'all to listen. I'm never quitting on my mission, I'ma roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going, better go in the right direction. In the moment you stressing, but you gon' be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains. Haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. Whoa. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road.
You're listening to the Tom Ficklin Show on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I want to thank Tom Ficklin for providing us the opportunity to talk about this platform in regards to philanthropy through an equity lens. Today with us, we have Michael Van Leesten, Debbie Sims, and Ife Garden. We'll probably have another individual joining us shortly. So I'll give everybody a chance to introduce themselves and start off with Mr. Van Leesten.
Hi, my name is Michael Van Leesten. I'm the Director of Organization Development at Social Venture Partners, Connecticut.
Thank you very much. Sister Ife.
Greetings, I'm Ife Michelle Gardine, founder of Culturally Lit Elm City Lit Fest.
Awesome, thank you. And the wonderful, wonderful sister, Debbie Sims.
Good afternoon, my name is Debbie Sims and I am the founder and community champion for the East End and Artsy Market and Cafe in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Awesome, awesome, thank you. Thank you for joining us. So I just wanted to get started with primarily focusing on a little bit about what SVP, some folks may not know what it is, and then how we came to put together the equity fund from 2020 into 2021. Mike, if you want to discuss that somewhat.
Sure. So in short, Social Venture Partners is an organization that's focused on helping create systemic change in workforce development in early childhood sectors. We work with nonprofits and government agencies in order to change how we approach funding and how we approach the practices of participants in the workforce development space, and aligning and convening stakeholders in those spaces in order to create better outcomes for people, especially people in more vulnerable communities. With respect to the Race Equity Fund that Earl mentioned, that was what was called a participatory grant-making fund, where we engaged seven individuals, including Earl, who had a deep knowledge and experience of the communities of New Haven and Bridgeport, to make decisions on funding organizations that were engaged in systems change. So Debbie Sims, Ife Garden, and perhaps our other guest, if she arrives, were the leaders and are the leaders of some of the organizations that we funded. The last thing I'll say is that the participatory grant making was important from our perspective, because it's very important that people who have long histories and deep knowledge of the communities that we're trying to serve make the decisions regarding who to fund and where the most impact would be. And that is a change from traditional philanthropic practices.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you describe kind of because you guys are already doing work in the community, as you said, doing system changes, but what was the impetus for looking that deeply into it to as we say in the reentry community, bringing those that are closest to the problem, are also closest to the solution, bringing them in to make change. What was the impetus for the change in strategy with that?
So my argument was that if you want to make a good decision, whether it's philanthropy or investment or whatever, more information is better. And if you're going to make the best information, if the best decision is the best informed decision. And so it made logical sense to me from an information theory actually capital markets theory, that if you want to make the right decision about what to fund, you should talk to the people who know the communities that are going to be funded. The other thing is that there's an equity ethos associated with this, and that it's a far more democratic approach towards funding than traditional funding presents. And so from sort of a philosophical or ethical point of view, it also has its appeal in that regard.
Okay, thank you very much. So with this equity fund being created, and being myself being a part of that process, it was a very arduous, compacted process that we started late 2020 and went into probably the first and second quarter of 2021, with picking some of these very unique people, such as IFE, such as Debbie and their organizations. What do you see as the lasting impact of this initial equity fund?
I think one of the most important influences it had was the development of the DEI subcommittee of the Governor's Workforce Council. So, and you know, you're the lead on one of the subcommittees.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
The whole idea was to open people's minds to the value of input that could come from people who are deeply knowledgeable and informed about the communities we're trying to serve. So, we basically, the Race Equity Fund was a proof point. It basically proved that you could do it. And that was extremely important to me, that it the influence and its impact extend far beyond SVP or the fund itself.
Okay. So with that being said, I want to bring in a couple of the recipients, and I'll start with IFE. Please, could you let me know your first thoughts when this opportunity was presented to you? What you thought about it is a possibility for $25,000 unrestricted. And also talk about your organization and how it got started.
Well, I started Elm City Lit Fest out of a love of books and literature. The Elm City Lit Fest is a celebration of literature, literary arts, and literary artists of the African diaspora. And I've always loved reading. I write, I worked with a lot of arts organizations throughout Greater New Haven area, and we have a lot of celebrations here, a lot of festivals, and there wasn't a literary festival in New Haven, so that's how the Lit Fest started. And so when we looking around for of course seeking funding, and saw this opportunity, I forgot, it was like an email or something we were searching, and saw SVP Partners in the Racial Equity Bureau. We thought we would be a great fit for that, because one of the things about the lit part of Elm City Lit Fest also is literacy within our community. So whatever you read. thanks to the funding for from SVP, we've been also able now to we did Lit Fest in 2021 live for 2 days. And now we are expanding our programming. So we're becoming culturally lit, which will be a celebration in addition to Lit Fest. We'll be offering hosting other events throughout 2022 and beyond. And also we have a bi-weekly podcast. So we've been able to reach a lot.
Okay, Ife's frozen, so you're going to have to jump in.
Okay, sorry. Hey, Ife, we're going to get back to you. It looks like you got a little frozen. There was some technical difficulties. Debbie Sims out of Bridgeport, you want to discuss, what you thought about when you first came across the SPP opportunity for funding, and talk to us about your organization as well and the great work that you guys are doing in the Bridgeport community.
Sure. Thank you for inviting us to participate today. I'm going to preface this by saying I'm coming off of bronchitis, so excuse my coughing.
No. Long as you're good, that's what matters most. So
yeah, I'm feeling much better. Thank you. But our organization is a new organization. Actually, our third birthday will be February 13th, so I'm excited about that. We opened up in 2009. We are a neighborhood revitalization zone organization, and we organized around the need to bring back fresh produce to our neighborhood. So it's about 26 of us. Most of us have been in the neighborhood over 30 years. And we probably 50 years worth of broken promises. And we finally got sick and tired of being sick and tired and figured out how to do it ourselves. So I spent a lot of time, listening, meeting developers. I said we became our own economic development experts. A lot of times, they bring all these experts in the community and they think that we can't figure it out. But collectively, we figured out how to do it. So in 2019, our organization became the national winners for the Aetna Foundation. We beat out 50 other states throughout the country. When we heard about this grant through the Social Venture Partners, we got sick and tired of this one block in our neighborhood. And even though we thought that it was a far-fetched idea, and we entered at the last minute, we entered anyway. So we have this one nuisance, what we call a nuisance corner on our block. And everything was going on that corner, from drug dealing to prostitution to harassing seniors. And so our group says, we're going to buy the block. And so that was the name of our proposal we put together. And buy the block to us meant for us trying to take back our block and take back it in the terms of what does it mean for our community to come back together, to purchase this block, to rebuild this block, to make it, return it back to what it was to the community 20, 30 years ago. So this block also sits on the corner of a neighborhood school. It's been notorious. Several people have been killed on this block. And as a group, we spent, the last year trying to figure out what that looks like. So a year ago, I'd say that what we initially thought, the concept of buy the block was in terms of, buying the block, looking at funds to try and buy it. We spent a lot of time talking to people and even the people who were causing the trouble on the block to figure out what the why looks like as to why all these things are happening in that block.
So you're attempting to get to the root cause of the matter and not just deal with just the symptoms, but get to the root cause.
Right. So we spent a lot of time doing that. We're in the process of writing a curriculum for by the block, because it's important now that we instill in future generations what that could look like. We're also building a board game for what that looks like, so kids could begin to think in that concept, what by the block looks like. Because our kids are not trained that way. We're not trained to grow up to think, I could buy that block. When I grow up, I'm going to buy that block because I'm going to put my store there. I'm going to open up my barbershop there. Our kids, they leave our communities. They don't come back here. So we're into, that trend of mode. We have changed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, both you and Ife touched on some important things, not only around culturally lit, but at the end of the day, it revolves around literacy, whether that's literacy through actual reading or financial literacy, which is not very much taught in our community at a young age to understand how finances really work. Because I remember growing up, I didn't learn about finances with my parents. I didn't sit at the table with them when they were crunching bills. So I didn't understand about bank accounts or learning about, you know, investing and stocks and credit and what all that means. So that's very important work that you guys are doing there.
Yes, it is. And that's made a big difference. You'd be amazed at the things that people do not know and that they were never taught. And it really has brought our community together in ways that we have never seen before.
Okay. So with that being said, and Efe, I want to get back to you, because I know you had a little technical difficulties and you were talking about some of the things that you were expanding on with Culturally Lit Fest. Because I want to ask you guys both the impact that the grant has had with your organizations, whether that's expansion or capacity building or even, in fact, you know, in some cases, people won't fund an organization or an ideal unless you already have funding. So if you guys could talk about some of the different ways that the funding from SVP's equity race fund has had on you, on your organizations.
Okay. So I like to say that, one of the benefits of participating in the Lit Fest too is, I don't believe in starving artists. I believe in working artists. And so we are able to at least give a stipend or something to all the participants, all the featured artists, literary artists or performers for Lit Fest. We have production costs, things like that. And also in the process of creating a business plan to become a creative enterprise. And the funds help stabilize what we were doing and the expansion, as well as help us give us leverage for attracting other sources of funding or investors. Because at this point now, we're looking at becoming not so much a nonprofit, but a business, and becoming in an LLC or whatever it has to become. But the funding definitely helped with that, especially it was in our second year. I started in, the first one was in 2020, was virtual. And this year we were able to go live, as I said, and just expanding programming overall has been very, very beneficial.
Awesome.
And reaching more people, like, cause as I was saying before, the part of lit is literacy, and we encourage whatever reading there is, if it's a comic book, if it's whatever, a creation of literature, however it has to be.
You're definitely speaking my language. I have about 10,000 comic books in my basement, so there's more we could do. Definitely talk about that. Ms. Sims, you want to talk about some of the impact and expansion that you guys are able to do, or however you might be using the funding, what it's allowed you guys to do? And then we have a third guest that we're going to get to, which is Dr. Roger Staggers Hakim, in just a moment.
I think one of the most important things that the funding has allowed us to do is it's allowed us to really do a lot more engagement with a lot more people in our community. So we have been out there with different populations and spending more time with more people and talking and asking the why. So sometimes I could be a little impulsive. And sometimes I just want problems solved overnight. And so we have a lot of people who've been working with us. And the question, you know, they keep asking is why? Well, why are they doing this? And, you know, why does this problem? And why do they want to stay here? And why? And until we can understand everybody's why, and the only way that we're going to understand that is we really got to talk to a lot of people. So we have really been able to do that in this COVID environment, meet a lot of people, do a lot more engagement with a lot of people. And I'm really grateful for that because I wouldn't have been able to have all the conversations that we've been able to have. And I think that's what make, you know, the transition easier for this block. It'll be long standing because more people will have buy-in to it. So it's not just the NRZ, you know, project when we say, well, now we got to move these people and we have to do this. It becomes everybody's problem when we go in to move these folks off this block. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And without further ado, I want to take some time to have Dr. Raja introduce herself and her organization and some of the impact or the impetus for her organization and ideas about applying for the race equity funding.
Oh, thank you, Earl, for having me on. It's good to see you, Mr. Van Leesten. I'm with Cheer Institute. Cheer Institute is a national nonprofit. We're based in Connecticut. Our focus is really to eliminate health inequities and health disparities. And we do this by addressing larger social determinants of health. So education, racism, looking at housing, issues with communities, all of these things have implications for health outcomes. A big part of our work is really we don't have, at this point, we don't have a brick and mortar. We're hoping to get to that point. We also work with community agencies. So the impetus for Power to Change is really such that it really allowed us to develop a model. But it connects to all areas of what it is that we're trying to do. We can't say that we want to have good health if we don't touch on those other areas that impact health. We can't, you know, talk about having good health policies if the infrastructure is not there for communities to be healthy. So with Power to Change, it again brings, you know, and that was really the application for our grant that received the funding. It was really around bringing together key components that would allow for communities to be healthy. On one hand, community engagement. How do we work with communities and bring community members in so they're part of social change, they're part of policy change, they understand how the process of policy implementation. The second part is working with policymakers. How do policymakers construct policies from an equity lens? How can we engage policymakers to do that? And then we chose one area. We decided to work with educational school systems to look at their internal policies. How are their policies impacting Brown and Black students? How are they actually, how are these policies that they and likely unknowingly put in place, impacting the outcomes for these students. So the funds to date with us, there's been a lot of processing, a lot of strategizing, a lot of really building out this model, talking with folks around how this would actually be implemented. We're going to be launching in February. We actually have two community sessions planned, one in Bridgeport, one in New Haven. They're going to be virtual. We've trained community advocates to work with us. CHEER's model is that we believe in community-based participatory research. So community members have to be engaged in this process. When it comes to the educational side, we're going to be working with equity committees in school-based systems. And Earl, you and I have been in communication recently about some conversation, the two really engaging the Black and Hispanic caucus for the state as well, though, too. And I've been reaching out to policymakers as well, alder persons, et cetera, to work with policymakers around, again, you know, really, again, conversation and discussion around how policy implementation can be involved with an equity lens. And collectively, what CHEER is trying to do is to see how can we bring in and engage community members into conversation with policymakers so that people can say, this is what our community needs. And for people from the community members to be engaged in what that process looks like. You know, should people be writing testimony? How can people follow legislation? How can people have the lens to say, okay, well, this policy is affecting our community in this particular way and feel empowered to be able to speak up to make those changes. So we're again ecstatic and I think what it's done, and we've already, you know, thought about like, okay, what's going to happen next? After we have these community forums, Cheer needs to have a hub so that communities can continue this conversation and engagement. So we've been exploring other opportunities for funding the two to continue this work. But it's been fantastic. It's been amazing for us to really, again, really try to plan out this model. We don't see this as a one-year thing. This is a long-term thing. Policy is a long-term thing, right? It doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't happen over a year. So we're looking at this from a long-term perspective. So it's been phenomenal to engage with the partners, with the other consultants who have got on board to help plan this out.
Oh, that's awesome. And firm believer again, you know, giving people agency of themselves and understanding the process. I know in reentry over the last couple of years, we started having a day of dignity up at the state capitol. Unfortunately, it was hampered by COVID in 2020. But prior to that, you know, we brought up at least about in both instances from 2018 to 2019, we brought up probably about anywhere from 500 to 600 people up to the state capitol. And I know when we kind of did a survey, probably about 80 to 85% of those folks that had come up to the state capitol to represent themselves and how, you know, the carceral system that we have in the country and in the state had an impact on them. Maybe about 85% of them had never been up to the state capitol. So the work that you're doing is very impactful. That's great. Mr. Van Leesden, I want to get back to you and your thoughts about, you know, it was a very kind of lengthy process to whittle down to the eight candidates that ultimately did end up receiving the funding. I believe it was between, 56 to 60 candidates that we were reviewing. And so if you could talk a little bit about that process and what made these folks that we have here, and there are definitely others, you know, kind of stand out. While I know you were kind of taking a bird's eye view and letting the myself and the six other folks kind of really dig into and choosing these candidates, but you did have a perspective and you were part of that process to a certain degree.
So what actually was really inspiring to me was the common thread that all of the grant recipients shared was that they were all focused on helping the community help themselves. Helping people in the community help themselves, whether teaching them how to advocate for themselves, teaching them how to express themselves, teaching them how to feed themselves properly, how to take care of their health in terms of the Sickle Cell Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. So at the end of the day, what was really pronounced for me was that people helping themselves and helping people develop a sense of agency. And this is, you guys have already hit on this in the comments that you've made, but really at the end of the day, the only person who can save you is you, right? The only person that can save a community is that community. You could throw $1 billion at a community, but if they don't feel empowered to use it and use it properly, it won't be used wisely. So, you know, that we did not predict what the common thread of all of these organizations would be. In fact, when you look at it from the outside, they seem very disparate. They seem to be doing all different kinds of things, but that was the common thread. And I think that ethos also fed into the development of the DEI committee at the OWS, at the Office of Workforce Strategy, but also it's kind of the tenor, that approach, that ethos is what's really going to pull people forward, pull the community forward. And I for one, finished the process very, very inspired and left it more idealistic than I came, although I started it from a pretty idealistic mindset. So I hope that answers your question.
No, it definitely does. I wonder if you could, you know, touch upon or enlighten some folks here who may not be familiar with what's going on with the Governor's Workforce Council or OWS.
Okay, so in brief, and it's much more complicated than what I'm describing, but almost 2 years ago, the governor retasked the Governor's Workforce Council to develop a comprehensive statewide strategy regarding workforce development. And that included aligning key sectors, which includes the business sector, the nonprofit sector, the educational sector, et cetera. What has happened over the years is that all of these folks haven't been collaborating, haven't been able to collaborate to the degree necessary to get the best results, especially for people who are in more vulnerable communities. So subsequent to that, some legislation was passed to establish the Office of Workforce Strategy to coordinate to coordinate the strategic alignment of these various stakeholders in the workforce development system. In addition to that, there is federal money coming in that's passing through OWS and through the Governor's Workforce Council. And that council will then determine how the money is distributed to parties, stakeholders in the workforce development space. The key thing in that space is that there was a comprehensive RFP called Career Connect, which has been established and is online. And really, it does a number of things. It's comprehensive, but one of the things it does is it really does encourage and incent organizations to work collaboratively. But whether, you know, the largest organizations in the space are the workforce investment boards, and then there are various organizations and nonprofits that work in the space too. And ultimately, what they're trying to do is create regional and statewide solutions and also, as I said before, encourage people to collaborate. So it's voluminous. If you're interested in it, you can look up Career Connect through OWS. But the goal is to change the workforce development systems and the ecosystem in our state so that it serves more people more effectively, and in more communities, especially vulnerable ones.
Yeah, so you did allude that I am on one of the committees for the OWS and Diversity, Equity, Inclusion. I'm the chair for reentry. And, you know, what we're looking at is trying to make recommendations that eliminate many of the obstacles and barriers that folks who have been justice impacted, either newly returning from prison or have been out for a while, seem to, you know, have visited upon them. After serving their time and giving their time for whatever crime they committed. And we're looking at a lot of different recommendations. And by and large, the need for this not only is impactful for this community, because you got to think about it in the reentry community, the population, you have individuals that are elderly. A lot of the population now that are being released over the last couple of years now has changed from between 18 and 26 to 40 plus and up. And so you have that population that's coming out, you have disabled population that's coming out, and then you still have, you know, your younger individuals that are unfortunately inside the justice system, or I should say the criminal legal system. I don't necessarily know that it's justice, but at the end of the day, OWS and what it's doing, I'm a firm believer of, because it's bringing people to the table that, like the Race Equity Fund, previously hadn't had a voice in correcting their own issues and being part of the solution to the problems that were impacting them. So if you're not at the table, you're definitely on the menu. So that's something that I'm a firm believer of, and I'm glad that this fund and OWS is bringing a lot of folks to the table to provide a sense of self-agency for them. With that being said, I want to go into a couple of things, and getting back to Ife and Ms. Sims and Dr. Raja, starting off with Ife, if you could just talk a little bit about some of the upcoming things that you are planning, if you're able to. I know you're probably in the process of working with some people and you may not want to talk about that just yet, but if there are some things that you can share with us that the Culturally Lit Fest will be bringing to New Haven and beyond, to the state, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Okay, well, I can say that April 23rd, we will be doing a Diaspora Con at Quinnipiac University, which is a celebration of the African diaspora in comic book and graphic novels. Our podcast will be starting up in February. So we'll be broadcasting that this afternoon, actually, as we were supposed to have a Kwanzaa celebration back in December, and due to Omicron and COVID restrictions, we had to postpone that. But we will have a taping this afternoon. It will be on Facebook Live and on YouTube of the performers and activities that we were going to have at Kwanzaa. So please look for the culturally lit Kwanzaa throughout the year. Our celebration of the principles of Kwanzaa for our people throughout the year. And of course, Elm City Lit Fest will be September 12th. And we're planning Diaspora Book Awards for December. So there will be more to come. More things planned and more to come. Also, we're in the process of putting together an arts administrative training program for folks, or internship or apprenticeship. But that's in process. So that's part of what Culturally Lit will encompass. Because there, again, after my many years of working with various arts organizations over the years, there hasn't been a lot of people of color involved in the arts administrative aspect of the arts and producing, and that there's a renaissance happening now. We want folks to be prepared to get in on it.
That's great. So to that
open up other opportunities.
How is that also inclusive of working with, say, like the Long Wharf Theater, and then, you know, our own very own Schubert Theater in New Haven has a new executive director of Caribbean descent. So right. Are you planning on partnering with those folks as well?
Of course, yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
That's great. Ms. Thames, do you have some upcoming items that you'd like to share with the community happening in Bridgeport?
So there's going to be a lot going on at the market next year. I shouldn't say this with Michael on the phone, because he's probably going to look at my list and smile. But so we're going to have, you know, our birthday's in a couple of weeks, so we're going to gently celebrate that. But we're going to announce a national award that we won to work on issues surrounding Black mothers and Black women's health. So we are excited about that. We are hopefully going to make an announcement concerning our Women's Wellness Center. Our Family Wellness Center on the Mount Gromore site. So we are looking forward to that sometime in February, in collaboration with the City of Bridgeport. And then we're just going to be moving forward. You know, they got to direct me when I'm talking on these things. But and then moving forward on the projects that we're currently working on at the market, our Sunday Farmers Market, and our senior, we do a senior program that's called BREAC, which is Building Resilient Inclusive Communities with Our Seniors. So it's busy here. We do food, we do communities, and then we do specialty programs depending on what the community asks us to do, what fits within our mission.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. And Dr. Raja,
some
things that are upcoming that we could share with the community?
Absolutely. Yes. So immediately we have our two community forums through the SVP grant that we received, Power to Change. We have Power to Change New Haven, which is scheduled for Wednesday, February 2nd. It's going to be virtual from 6 to 8. You can find information on the Chair Institute link on Facebook. We should also be getting it up on our website as well. But if you go to Chair Institute on Facebook, we have the information there in the Zoom link. And then we have Power to Change Bridgeport. Power to Change Bridgeport is going to be Thursday, February 3rd, again, from 6 to 8:30. And again, that's going to be on Zoom Live. We do encourage community members to register, to come on, organizations to come on, so that we can have a good conversation about what communities need to see change. We have other experts there who are going to speak to community members about how to engage in advocacy for community folks in terms of implementing the change and trying to push for the change they'd like to see in their communities. And works separate from this, but just it's actually evolving. CHEER is going to have its first health conference called Public Health for the People, and it's going to be this summer. We'll have our first virtual conference. And again, it will pull together many aspects of this. And a big part of that is really making sure that public health information is accessible to the public. Sometimes public health gets actually very focused and it's not necessarily relatable to the general public. So this conference will be called Public Health for the People, and it'll be later this summer. So information will be coming out about that.
Awesome. I want to make sure that we stay in touch with all you guys, because I want to get this information that you guys have going out so we can put it out through different channels so that it reaches everybody that it needs to reach in New Haven and Bridgeport and throughout the state. Mr. Van Leesten, just to get back to you and talking about, you know, what you were referencing about the thread or the through line through all the different organizations and agencies that applied and were granted ultimately this SVP funding. Are there plans to do something with all the recipients or cohorts together? Because even in this brief conversation with these three amazing people in their organizations, it sounds like that, you know, there are opportunities for linkages for them to work together in different things.
I don't have specific plans, but I think it's a great idea. And I think I'm very willing.
You're welcome.
To follow, and I'm very willing to follow up on it. Absolutely. I think, you can't argue against that. I'm totally down for it.
Okay. And then I think, because we're running short, we're running up on the clock. And I know Harry's going to hit us up in about 8 minutes. I just want to make sure for those that are listening and those that are here right now that were recipients of the SVP, that they fully understand that, you know, it wasn't necessarily where they applied for this funding. They got the funding and they're doing their own thing, which is awesome. But they can still utilize yourself and some other folks from SVP as resources and help and guidance with different things, correct?
Absolutely. Definitely. I think Debbie and Ife can both attest to that because I've been in touch with them. And Debbie did remark on some work I've been doing with her because she takes on a lot and I was helping her with that. So yes, absolutely. I'm a phone call away a video call away at the very least. And I'm eager to. I've enjoyed the time that I've spent with Ife and Debbie in particular.
Okay.
And I just want to, if I may, I want to say, I appreciated the diversity of the programming that was funded, through SVP grant, because as you said, like a lot of times people don't see where they can collaborate or come together. And, when we look through, like the other recipients of this award last year, it was like, wow, like this is a really diverse sector of people doing different things in within our community to help build it. And that's what I would say we need more of. We need more of resources for people to have a more global, diverse way. There's so many ways we can help our community. You know, I'm doing it through culture and art, and then there's health and everything, but we're all intertwined as well. We're not just a tunnel.
One not just sided. A monolith. Right.
Not just a monolith.
It's a community. And I got to add that one of the things that happened is when I did interview individuals to join the Race Equity Fund. And then when I had individual conversations with dozens of organizations as they applied for the grant, it was striking to me how many people working even in the same sector or same space didn't know each other, which is, and that's an artifact of Connecticut. There's a hyper-individualism that really, you're not going to change the system one person or one organization at a time. You really have to have a full frontal, you know, approach with all of the different influencers or stakeholders engaged in targeting various facets, because human beings are complicated. Like, we need food, we need art, we need mental health, we need physical health, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and all of those things are affected by our attitudes towards ourselves and the work that we do.
No, that's great. And I found that to be the case being on the inside, looking out and working with some individuals. Some of them on the 7-person panel that, you know, helped put this together. Some of them I knew and then some of them I didn't. And we're all doing amazing things. And then, as well as the recipients of the awards, we can definitely go farther and do much more together than apart. So that is definitely an artifact of Connecticut. And I would say not just Connecticut, that's that rugged individualism, the American ethos, you know. But people of the diaspora and Black and brown communities, we know better that it's the community, you know, the village that helps you succeed. It's not about rugged individualism. That's my own personal opinion.
It's about Kuji Chagalia collective work and responsibility.
There's so much power in that, though. And I think we lose that because we're working on these silos and these silos on these islands. And we forget how powerful we are. I was actually just trying to say, like, Ife and Debbie, I definitely want to work with you. Can we at some point? Just because, I mean, seriously, I mean, Cheers really eager to collaborate and just, you know, there. And as you said, Ife, there's so many ways, though, too. I mean, there are powerful ways to connect education, health education through art, you know, and for us to touch people in many ways. So I definitely hope that we can. I have your information. I will be following up for sure. And certainly, if you need Cheer for anything, please let's collaborate and partner. I think that would be fantastic. I'd love it.
Awesome. And we want to express appreciation to SVP and Michael Van Leesten and Earl.
Absolutely.
For being selected.
Oh, thank you for being there to select.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? let's keep it real here.
Indeed. There were some choices that were a little bit harder than others, and then there were some choices that there was no question. So, yes, thank you guys for being a part of it. And taking that leap of faith, because, you know, I'm also a firm believer in, you know, you're better to try and fail than never tried at all. And you're better to ask the question. You know, the worst anybody could ever say to you is no, it's not going to kill you. So I think, Harry, you want to give us a time check? I think we're coming up on 11:50. So I don't want to get deeper into something and then be forced to cut off unless, you know, we have another opportunity to continue this conversation at another time.
I'm sorry. I was gonna type it in, and then I realized I could just talk to you guys.
Yeah, you can.
No, so we could actually go to 55. So,
oh, great.
Okay. And we could cut it off before then if you want, but all the way awesome. To 55.
Awesome. So what I'm interested in, like I said, is the linkages and looking at future programming between not only these folks that we have here with us right now, but the rest of the cohort and award recipients. You know, we had the NAACP be awarded for their Million Jobs campaign, which is focused on knocking down some of those barriers to employment for the reentry community and some of these industries that they heretofore have not had a real opportunity, whether that's in the healthcare or manufacturing. And, you know, even discussing the OWS and the reentry committee, you know, not for nothing. And you guys may know this, may not know this, but Connecticut is the oldest state by population, by age in the union. And so with that being said, there's going to be what they call a silver tsunami between people just retiring due to age or folks trying to get out from under to retire before a new state contract comes in. There's going to be a wealth of opportunities for employment, and those opportunities should be open to everyone. And we need to educate our folks about preparing themselves for those opportunities and whether those opportunities are, you know, in different vocations, work for the state, or in even working for themselves in entrepreneurial spirits. There are a lot, while while COVID has been devastating, I've lost four people myself in 2021. But there has also been an opportunity. So I hope that people are prepared to take advantage of the opportunities that will be available to them in the coming months, in the coming year, with the federal funding that's coming down, with people's eyes being opened up by the race equity fund that SVP started. There are a lot of opportunities for us to indeed live the spirit of Pooja Chagalia, which I want to add, when I was at UConn, we had the creator of Kwanzaa come, and I had that word to learn to express and teach people. And so that Pooja Chagalia is very ingrained in my spirit. And so I appreciate you bringing that up, Ife. That's awesome. I just had to share that.
And on MLK Day. Let us not forget.
Indeed. So with that being said, Mr. Min Leeston, I'm going to be looking for another opportunity to connect with you to talk about our recipients and how we can, link them all together and see what can come about, what can bloom, for lack of a better word, from that connection.
I'm really looking forward to it. This is going to be fun. It's going to be good, but it's going to be fun. And so, let's do it. I'm really excited about it. And we can always give you credit all the way through for suggesting an idea. Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
It's like I'm a throughline myself.
I love it. I love it, man. It's great.
I thank you for giving me the opportunity and seeking me out and letting me know, how I can contribute. So it's very much appreciated. All the different people I've gotten to know, the other opportunities that have opened up. It's been great. These are some wonderful, dynamic people that are doing some great things and going to fundamentally change our community. There's nothing that people can't do once they're made aware of their own power. So,
exactly.
And with that being said, I just want to thank everybody. Thank you, Mr. Min Leeston. Thank you, Ife. Thank you, Debbie. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Do you guys have, just going one by one, Ife to Debbie and to Dr. Rogers, just the last parting words to the community that's out there listening, starting with Ife.
Let's keep moving in the spirit of collective work and responsibility.
Awesome. Thank you. Ms. Sims, Sister Sims.
Thank all you guys for today. Collectively, I believe, I would serve by trust your crazy ideas, because collectively we can do anything. There's nothing that we cannot do.
Indeed. And Dr. Rogers, last but not least.
Last but not least. I would just say that for community members to remember that we are stronger collectively than we are individually. So we need to come together and really talk about what's happening and really talk about what we'd like to see for changes and really push for that change. So again, once we know we have the tools to make those changes, that we're very powerful. That's why oftentimes we're kept in the dark and we're not made aware about what we can do to have the communities that we'd like to have. And that's powerful.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And with that, we are going to come to a close on today's discussion of philanthropy through equity lens. Thank you all for listening. I know you could have been any place. I appreciate you being here with us. Enjoy your MLK Day and go out there and do something great.
Thank you, Earl.
Understand what black is. The source from which all things come. The security blanket for the stars. Understand what black is. It's not a color. It's the basis of all colors. It is not a complexion. It is a reflection of all complexions called human. And out of this blackness, passion flows like a river. Feelings tell the truth. song and dance and making you laugh are family members. Understand what black is, the breath you breathe, the sweat on your brow, the cheers and the tears balancing the world on your head. Faith is the glue that holds us all together. This is your blackness, not some horror story of lost souls drifting into the land of perversion. Black as love is a light shining on a path leading to the sun.